A5. Number 8, A.
We are on page 111, and we just pick up the thought again where we left it this morning, where we were trying to build up the tone of mind. Let's be still and quiet within ourselves and say, what's going on at all in being? And being says, what's going on is mind. What does that mean? It means that mind, being, capital B, is the only creator. So he is the only creator that creates, that produces, that brings forth, that makes everything. So it's the great producer, the creative power. And as it is the creator, it is the only cause. The only cause that creates anything. There is no other cause. There is no other creator. So nothing is ever going on in a creative way but the divine mind. Mind producing and bringing forth, forming, shaping everything according to the formations of mind. That which mind has as an idea in mind. So mind is creating what? Ideas. These ideas are the manifestation of the one mind. So mind manifests its own ideas with power and with force. And as it is with power, you have a great sense that mind is the only action and that everything is enacted by the divine mind. That behind every action is the restful, active action of mind, which has all the faculties, all the abilities, and it is this one mind, really, that emanates ideas that is the only influence in the world. So that we are never under any other influence but the divine mind influencing us with ideas and only with ideas, with right ideas. These ideas are always good, always positive, and therefore we feel that we are in an infinite field of influence of ideas going on and nothing but ideas. Now these ideas have infinite faculties. And because mind has these faculties, we have those faculties. We just have to go back to the one mind and have the mind that is God, the Christ mind. Then we too can work and produce and be creative like mind is creative. So we have the faculties of mind. Here we stopped and we go on page 111 where we see that mind guides, that mind is the guidance in our lives. It's really what already the first statement of the commandment said, that it is God that brings us out of Egypt, out of darkness into the promised land. Mind was guiding the Israelites all the way through, guiding safely, securely. So we feel that here we have a tone that the intelligence of mind, the wisdom of mind, that mind which knows all, is therefore the only mind, the only power, the only intelligence that can guide us rightly. So we have guiding, leading, steering, directing, as italicized terms, you have them there, and you feel at once, it doesn't really matter if I say guide or lead or steer or direct. It's all that one mind that has the intelligence which knows where to go and how to go and what to do when it wants to achieve its purpose, when it manifests itself. So mind, by manifesting itself, is constantly guiding us aright. And so we feel that we do not need any other guidance, any other directives, but the directives of mind that outlines what has to be done and how it has to be done, when it has to be done. So it points the direction, points out the direction. If mind guides and leads and steers, then as an opposite, we know at once that there are no accidents, because accident is a false guiding, it's a false leading. And so being in the consciousness of the one steering and guiding mind, we are free from being brought into a situation where there can happen accidents. Nothing happens in an unlawful, unordered way, because mind knows its own idea, knows its purpose, knows its aim, and knows how to get at that aim, to that aim, and how to get to that aim in a direct way. We have another one, that mind is unerring, and therefore mind corrects mistake. As mind is unerring, it can never make a mistake. It never makes mistakes, but therefore corrects mistakes. We always have to see the impact of an idea on the human. That's always a practical rule, that as you are thinking in the absolute way, like here, that mind is unerring, that you also see right away its impact to the human, therefore that the unerring guidance is correcting all that what the human mind tries to accomplish. It is therefore a correcting law, and a correcting power, and a corrective action, a corrective guidance, a corrective influence that is flowing from the divine mind. We feel therefore very much that if we are quiet within ourselves and build up the tonality of mind, that will take care of all the mistakes that we have made, that we could make, or that we might make. So that it is not only a preventive action of the divine mind, but also a corrective action of the divine mind. And we just let the divine mind work on that situation. We don't have to interfere humanly, except the divine mind tells us to interfere humanly. But else, let just mind work the way mind wants to work, because it knows much better how to correct the situation than we do. All our moral honesty and moral integrity and moral strictness and moral this and moral that can never do the job so well than the divine mind, which is not only moral but also spiritual, has a much bigger plan and can oversee and overlook a much bigger plan than we can humanly, and therefore we should leave it to the guidance and to the steering mind to correct the situation in mind's own way. It's sometimes difficult, because we feel that we have to defend mind, and that we have to stick up for mind and support mind, that mind really is supported, but mind doesn't need that. Mind is self-supporting and therefore self-maintaining, and knows jolly well what to do, and let it happen. So, you see, neither do we have to interfere humanly, nor would it be right to be apathetical about the situation and just say mind does it. We have to have a conscious consciousness of mind's directives and mind's corrective power, conscious consciousness, and not just say, well, mind will do it, you know, mind has an idea, it will do it. That is naturally not consciousness, and therefore it will not work the way it should work. But if we see that the whole universe is an atmosphere of the divine mind, that nothing happens in the universe but mind acting powerfully, lawfully, intelligently, knowingly, guidingly, leadingly, steeringly in every situation, then we know that mind will put things straighten out things the way mind wants to do it. Because mind wants to do it, we come to that idea of the will of the divine mind, that the only will there is the divine will, the will of divine mind. Therefore, one can see at once that it corrects human will, and that the human will has no place in the activities of the divine mind. This is sometimes difficult for those who have a strong will and a powerful will, a self-will, those who feel they know how to do and what should be done and how it should be done and when it should be done, to put that will aside and let's say, all right, just step aside, let the will of divine mind work and have its course. Because it's really the will of the divine mind to hold man in a perfect state. It is not just something that we can pray mind to be and say to mind, well, please mind, look that you maintain us properly and that you look after us. No, it's much bigger. It's the will of mind itself. Mind wants to keep every idea intact and harmonious and healthy and whole. Mind wants that. So mind is always practicing on us. It's just a matter, can we step away humanly so that the activities of mind just flow through us and flow through the situation and fulfill its aim. Therefore, mind is the mandate that demands obedience. Mind is law, this great idea, law, where we see that mind must be law. And now here with law again, you come to a very fundamental idea where you see law would be impossible without cause, without power, without action, without direction, without intelligence. A law that does not have these qualities is just not the law. In order for a law to be a law, it needs to show that there is a cause, that that cause creates something, that it, by creating an effect, it must act, so it must be active and act accordingly, but as it is acting towards a definite aim, it must be intelligent and not just blind. It's not a blind law. It must have intelligence, and in acting intelligently, it does steer and it does guide. And can you see in that one term, law, is so to say gathered together again the main ideas that we have seen as mind. So without law, or without power and cause and intelligence steering, we could not even have law. This is again a good example to show how these ideas all hinge together very closely, very intimately. We have on page 113, control. Really, control has to do with power again. We cannot exercise control over something without power. It really should have action in it. It should really have law in it. It must have intelligence in it, or we control it unintelligently. It must be unerring. And again, you feel how control is a term that unites all those wonderful qualities of mind, and only when they are there, we really have a right sense of controlling or regulating. Mind regulates everything. And somehow we feel the cybernetic law of self-regulation and self-government. So we come to mind governs on page 114, where Mrs. Eddy would show often that mind governs man, that mind governs the universe, that mind governs all supremely, that mind governs the signs of mind, we have a great sense of the power of mind to govern. Now, this idea governs is perhaps an idea that can just as easily be put under principle, because it all depends what we understand under government or which aspect of government we are considering. And I want to take this again as an example for methodology. See, sometimes you are not quite sure if a term is characterizing one or two synonymous terms, like this one. In speaking or writing, I could just as well talk about government when I'm talking about principle. The principle governs. But when I say principle governs, I mean something else than when I say mind governs. When I say mind governs, then I speak about that aspect of government which has to do with intelligent government, with the intelligence that can govern. I put more the accent then on mind, on the intelligence, on the leadings of governing, the directing of the government, whereas if I use it as principle, I would see it much more so that every detail of that which is governed is under one government, because that's the idea of principle, that principle governs all ideas, or that principle unites all ideas into one, that in principle you see that all infinite ideas are gathered into a system. When the relationship, so to say, of governor and governed is brought out, then it is principle. But when I want to ask, what is that central intelligence? What is the central intelligence that can lead every part in the right way so that it makes sense, so that they harmonize with each other? That's what government should do, that it should bring all the parts of the field that is governed together into one harmony. Then I would see it as principle. Principle governing every idea. So you could just as well put governing under principle, but always know in which way. What is the main accent? So we begin to see that mind governs, and something in me says, oh, that's fine. So it's not people that govern me. It's not something unlawful, accidental that governs me, something that is ignorant that governs me. What you say is by accident, that something governs me by accident, haphazard, in a haphazard way, but that there is a divine mind, an intelligent divine mind that knows how to lead me and therefore how to govern me, and therefore governs every part of my system. And there I would come to principle. The moment I go over to that, I would see that it governs every part of my system, of my body. Then I would put it under principle. We have here that mind heals. Again, very often you could use truth heals. So this is another idea that has great affinities with truth also. And again, you can see the difference between mind and truth. When we say that mind heals, then we ask about the medicine of mind. We ask, what is it that heals? And we see it is mind healing. It is through the channel of mind that the body is healed. If I have truth healing, then I see that truth is the remedy of the healing, that it is that true state of being that brings about health. And so, again, you can have heels on the mind or on the truth. Each time it is meaning something different. Here it is, the medicine of mind, and therefore, I think right afterwards, yes, you have on page 116 and 117, that Mrs. Eddy speaks about mind healing. See, she speaks not about spirit healing, spirit hyphen healing, or about soul hyphen healing, or principle healing, or life healing. She may speak about truth hyphen healing, but not love healing, because here you can see it very easily what is the difference between mind healing and truth healing. Namely, that mind healing says, what is at the cause of healing? What is that power, that activity, that intelligence that is used for healing? Then it is mind. Then it's mind. But when we ask what is the right remedy, then it's truth. Then it's the knowing the truth that heals. So the moment we ask which truth is necessary to heal, which specific truth is that which takes care of a situation, then it is truth healing. So that every truth healing needs mind as the medicine, as a true medicine. Every healing is done through realizing in the divine mind that mind is the activity and the power that heals. That's why we have mind healing. And on 17, that mind is the first medicine and the only medicine that we use. Further, on 117, mind saves. Just as it heals, it saves. And again, very often she would use truth that saves. It saves, it cares for the body, mind is the great help. You have those terms in italics. Meaning, yes, mind is really that which saves, which supports you, which maintains you, and therefore right afterwards we have that mind maintains. Because in order to be maintained, you need the power of mind, you need the intelligence of mind, you need the creative ability of mind, or you cannot maintain it, you need the action of mind. And so you can see again, maintaining demands power and action and intelligence. If anybody wants to maintain something, maintains you, he needs power to do that in some way. Then we have that mind is limitless. She speaks a lot about limitless mind, and I think this is questionable in some way, because with limitless we come into that field of we go over into the field of soul, where one then sees that soul is that which is unlimited. But still we could see that that mind, which is the one mind, reaches over ocean and continents, is unbounded, that it includes all. And so finally you have the all in all, really a climax of mind. Mind that says, I'm all, plus I'm all in all. The right way to print it would be, as you have it afterwards, four lines further down, namely the all, the first all is capitalized, the second all is not capitalized. See, that's really the meaning of mind here. That meaning is all, that mind is all as an infinite all, but that all is really covering all, small a, everything. That the all is in everything. is the all of all qualities, is the all of all situation, is the all of all opportunities, is the all of all faculties, is the all of all. And therefore, here we get the terrific tone of that mind that is all in all, and finally that it is, that there is just one mind. That mind is one, that there are not minds many, that there are not minds that are against each other, that there is no quarrel between one mind and the other mind, but that there is just one mind, the mind of all. The mind that is all in all. Therefore, each one of us has only that one mind, that is God, and so mind is all in all. In all of you and in all situations.